The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, I'm talking to John Smirek. This is hour two. I'm still talking to John. John, you said you wanted to change the channel because what we've been sharing is a bit difficult. Maybe we can talk about something hopeful. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, instead of red-pilling people about the fact that we live in Soviet America, I'd like to encourage people to read some of the Samizdat literature. Some of the literature that's being produced that points to eternal truths that help us to get through dark, difficult times and squalid, foolish people. And your new book, Is Atheism Dead?, was really like a ray of light to me in the little cave I dwell in here. You and I talked yesterday. We recorded a show, an hour-long show for stream.org about atheism and about your book. And one interesting point that we sort of came to was the scientific objective evidence that random chance could not have produced a universe compatible with life, a planet compatible with life, substances such as water, which seem uniquely designed for life because they don't act chemically like any other substance, and then all the organic chemicals to create the amazing alphabet that is DNA, organized into an informational system, the elaborate microcomputer, nanocomputer, that is the smallest, most primitive bacteria cell. The smallest, most primitive bacteria cell is more complicated than the largest supercomputer mankind has ever developed, using millions of man hours of brilliant computer scientists working together, building on the shoulders of decades of work before them. We developed these supercomputers, cumulatively millions of man hours of people with IQs of 180 poured into creating these supercomputers, and none of them begin to approach the sophistication and complexity of the smallest bacterium.
It is okay.
Toilet seats, but we're supposed to believe this happened by tornadoes going through junkyards, turning them into Boeing 747s.
Well, look, I'm thrilled, by the way, that you got all this from reading my book, because I do think that half the time when I write something, I'm astonished at what I'm writing. I'm thinking, how can this be? How is it that the world doesn't know this? So my zeal in promoting the book is because I think when people know just what's in the book, I mean, I'm just covering, you know, the highlights, it changes your view of reality. You start saying, look, there is no question that there's a God. There's simply no question. The thing you mentioned about water, that was one of my favorite chapters in the book, because I thought, what could be more normal than water? What do you take for granted more than you take water for granted? And then when you start looking into it, Michael Denton wrote a book about it. I think I got most of my information from his book, but I thought to myself, we need to teach this in schools. Water is the most insane concoction. We think it's normal. And when you get into the molecular structure, you get into certain properties of it, you just say, it's not possible that this just happened. It's just,
let's be specific. Here's the thing about water. Most substances, when they freeze, get heavier and denser and go to the bottom. Okay. Look, iron in its solid form is a rock that sits on the ground. In its liquid form, it melts, and in its gas form, it flies away. Water doesn't sink to the bottom. Water, unlike virtually every other substance in the universe, becomes less dense when it's frozen, when it's solid. What does that mean? That we can have lakes and we can have rivers and we can have water and we can have life. Because if water got heavier and sank to the bottom, lakes would just freeze forever. Most of the, all life would have died during the Ice Age if it had ever been created, been able to develop.
And that's only the simplest aspect of water. Right. And I have to say, so as I was looking into this, I mean, I didn't expect to write a chapter on water. I was just writing about the fine-tuned universe. I wrote about it in my Miracles book. And I said, let me just go into more. And I discovered stuff. And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, it's insane. But whenever I say something's insane, then the second thing is, and it's equally insane that we don't know about it. In other words, something this outrageous, you'd think at least everybody would know about it. We put a man on the moon. That was covered by the news media because it was one of the most extraordinary things ever accomplished by human beings. So we didn't just say, well, it's just, it's a busy news day. We're not going to get to that. What we now know about water, what we now know about light coming from the sun, we know this needs to be taught in every school because this is science. It's not a Christian spin on science. No. This is simply science. That's why I put it in my book, Is Atheism Dead? And John, forgive me for saying this, but I want to remind people, if you get on the launch team for the book, you can read the book today. If you go to my website, ericmetaxas.com, and you'll see there's links to buy the book for $14.97 to pre-order it. If you do that, you won't get the actual book till October 20th or something like that. But you will be able to read the book today as John did if you join the launch team. So I want to say that just because it's important to me to get this information out. I really believe the more people learn some of the stuff that I put in the book, like you just said about water. And again, that's just one little thing. But it does simply make you, it knocks you back and you start thinking, I've been taking God's creation for granted. I had no idea how crazy it is. It's so beautiful. It's so complex. It's so designed that it almost makes you speechless when you look at it. At least that's my takeaway.
So what the uptake of your book is that God is as serious as a heart attack. God is as real as the inevitability of death. He is as real as the dangers of drunk driving. He is as real as the cancer you're going to get from smoking. He is inevitable. He's not some wistful option that you might weigh. Well, maybe I'll believe in the law of gravity. Maybe I'm going to believe in causality today. Oh, maybe I am going to avoid fire because it will burn me. The existence of God is a brute, hard fact, which you might even regret. There are times when I'm like, oh, if only the atheist were right.
Right.
Frankly, I would rather the certainty of annihilation after death than the very real chance of hell. I would rather God did not exist, but sadly he does. There's a book I want to write someday. We regret to inform you that Christ is risen. That's a title I plan to use someday.
That's brilliant. You should at least write the article. John, there's so much I want you to write. Man, you better stay healthy. I don't care what you need to do because you got a lot. You've got a lot of books to write. What you just mentioned, when I was writing this book, one of the most astounding things to me was discovering that the two leading atheists of the 20th century, Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus, came to faith at the end of their lives. I said, how is it possible that nobody knows this?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. And when I discovered it, I thought, this happens to me a lot of times. I'll find something when I'm writing a book and I think, how did it get to be me that found this? Because I didn't have to dig for decades to discover this. I just happened to find a book and I read it and I think, wait a minute, this is real. And I do more research and you find out it's true. But two of the biggest atheists of the 20th century, Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus, they looked into the abyss, the bleakness of atheism harder than anyone. And at the end, it was untenable. They couldn't handle it. They said, doesn't make sense. Both of them turned to God. And Camus was practically begging a priest to baptize him. And it was a mainline Protestant priest. And he was kind of like, nah.
Well, he already had been baptized. So that was fine.
No, he had been. But he wanted to make an official restatement.
Right.
And the priest was, I think, a Presbyterian word. But he was like, well, I don't know. And I don't think you're ready or something like that.
What confirmation is for? He should have gone to a Catholic.
This
would have known the rules. We have rules for these things.
It's almost funny. But anyway, well, thanks for talking about my book with me. And it really is. I hope it encourages people because we need some encouragement, don't we?
Yeah, we certainly
go to. We're going to talk to Joel Rosenberg. John Zmirak, thanks for all you do, my friend. God bless you.
God bless. Have a great day.
Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works.
Folks, remember I promised I would have Roel Josenberg on the show? I realized I'm getting his name wrong. It's not Roel Josenberg. It's actually Joel Rosenberg. Joel Rosenberg, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be with you. Oh, I mean, Eric, it's great.
I've heard of you. In fact, I've had you on the program many times. You have so many New York Times bestsellers that I laugh because to somebody who have, I don't know, I think I have five officially, but I thought you have written so many books and your books do so well, and you now have another book. So before we get into current events, because I want to talk to you about the Middle East.
Sure.
Tell us about the new book, because I know it's the new book.
Well, what's interesting about this book, Enemies and Allies, is it's the first book. It's the only book that really takes you inside the Middle East 20 years after the horrific events of 9/11, to assess where are we today, right? Who are our enemies today? Because they've changed. And who are our allies today? They've also changed. But what makes this book distinctive is not just that I'm, you know, sort of analyzing it from my own, you know, vantage point, but I'm taking the readers inside the palaces and the presidential compounds in almost every major American ally in the Middle East. You're sitting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. You're sitting with Israeli President Ruvi Rivlin. You're sitting with Israel's defense minister. But you're also sitting, as I take you with me, into Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and you're meeting Mohammed bin Salman, the most consequential and I think the most controversial leader in the Arab world, and President el-Sisi in Egypt, and King Abdullah in Jordan, and the leaders of the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. There is no book like this that has allowed you to sit there and listen to these leaders. What do they think are the worst threats facing not only the United States, but them? How are they changing their societies? Because there are massive changes. So that's what makes this book interesting. And for me, fascinating to live it over the last few years.
Well, obviously, you told me that you're in Albuquerque right now. Now, technically, that's not even part of the Middle East. Am I right?
That is correct. I went the other direction.
I know that. I know my geography. All right. You can't push me around just because, you know, you live in the Middle East. But I know a lot of stuff, for example. But actually, this is true. You told me you're in Skip Heitzig's office, that you're in Albuquerque. He's a wonderful pastor. I've preached in that church many times. And I laughed because when I was there, I remember Skip saying to me, you know, you need to meet this guy, Stephen Collins. He's discovered biblical Sodom. He's got an archaeological museum. And I thought, wait a second, I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We're really, really, really far from the sands of the Middle East. And obviously, I got to know Stephen Collins, and I put his story in my new book, Is Atheism Dead? But it always cracks me up that it was in Albuquerque through Skip Heitzig that I found out about one of the most significant archaeological finds of our lifetimes in the Middle East. So what brings you to Albuquerque, since you're normally at least on the East Coast of the United States?
Well, 15 years ago, Eric, Skip Heitzig invited me out to talk with him and his congregation about the first nonfiction book I'd ever written called Epicenter. And he got so excited about this book, about really looking both at the geopolitical and the biblical understanding of Israel and the Arab Muslim world, that he said, we should do an Epicenter conference. I said, okay. He said, yeah, we should have 2,000 people in Jerusalem. And I said, I don't know how to organize a conference like that, but we did it. He said, we need to create an Epicenter documentary film. This needs to be shown in churches all over the
Holy
country.
Holy cow, that's incredible. How to do this.
I need to build, you need to have a website that explains. I said, so Skip got excited. He was creative. He helped co-produce this film. He co-hosted it. We had this conference. And for 15 years, we've been working together to help educate Christians and obviously non-Christians as well. What is going on in the Middle East? Why does it matter to us? And how, as Christians in particular, but not exclusively, how should we think differently? What's the so what of all this? Skip has been on almost every single delegation of evangelical Christian leaders that I've taken to meet with these high power, high profile Arab and Israeli leaders. And he's all through the book. And the last thing is, a year and a half ago, he helped me launch two new websites, All Israel News and All Arab News, to provide day to day, hour by hour coverage, not just sort of the big picture in Enemies and Allies.
I'm amazed. This is all news to me. It's fascinating. Skip is a dear, dear brother. And I didn't know that he was in your book, Enemies and Allies. I see a copy behind you there. But that is so cool. When I was, the only time I've ever visited Israel, we were with Sissy Graham Lynch, who's Franklin Graham's daughter. And she was going to stay there because Skip Heitzig and a group was going to come and to do a tour. While we were there, she got news from her father, Franklin, that her grandfather, Billy Graham, had just passed away. So, of course, she went home. But I've always thought that it would be fun to do a tour of Israel with Skip. Anyway, don't mean to get off this, but I've become so
Middle East. I remember seeing you. We were at the King David together. You were with part of the White House Faith Initiative team.
That's
and
right.
I remember chatting with you, and there was, you know, a number of others, Jack Graham and Dobson and others were there. We want to have you back because, you know, Eric, you and I have talked about this before. You and I are connected by Romans 1:16, where Paul says, I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God for salvation to the Jew first, but also to the Greek. So
to the Greek, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't mention the Irish, you'll notice. Doesn't mention the Italians. Tough luck. God wrote the book. He mentions the groups he wants to mention. Okay, so take it easy. No, so look, you, what's going on, it's always fun to joke around, but we have to get serious, because what's going on in the Middle East, so many people, and I'm included, are dramatically puzzled. Like, we've never been quite this puzzled at what just happened. I mean, I've been on the record that I don't believe Biden was elected, and I think this stuff is going to come out, but that's a side issue. Let's say he was elected. Let's say he is the president. Why would a U.S. president do what he did in Afghanistan? It is utterly unfathomable to me. In other words, as upset as I am about it, I'm even more mystified, because I feel like we all must be missing something. Nobody could be this incompetent. There's got to be more to the story. At least that's my theory.
Well, unfortunately, my book, Enemies and Allies, didn't come out in time. And I say that because as you read this book, what you'll see is I describe the transition from President Trump to President Biden, or I'll just say President Biden. There he is. He's making these.
Say Vice President Biden. That's probably more accurate, if you don't mind.
So I actually profile him towards the end of the book, because I knew everybody would be asking, well, what should we expect? It's going to be a sharp contrast from Trump to Biden. But what do we know about Biden?
Right.
Look, there are some good things. He's the most pro-Israel person in the entire Democratic Party.
Which is saying almost nothing. Correct?
Well, no. Oh. I mean, look, let's be fair. Israel has been a bipartisan point of unity for 75 years. It's becoming divided now because you've got the squad now trying to strip a $1 billion worth of missile defense funding for Israel from the latest budget.
But so-called Iron Dome.
The Iron Dome system, which is crazy because it protects Palestinians, Israeli, Arab Muslims, and Israeli Jews and Christians. But the point is, there are many pro-Israel people in the Democrat Party, and Biden is among them. But even Biden, some of Biden's closest friends say that his judgment on Middle East issues is horrific, and that he's been wrong on almost every foreign policy issue in the Middle East for the last 40 years. The former defense secretary under the Obama-Biden administration, Bob Gates, said this on the record. Now, in Enemies and Allies, I explain in some detail that in 2011, Biden boasts that he persuaded Obama to remove all U.S. military forces and advisors from Iraq. Now, Bob Gates at the time as defense secretary, Leon Panetta as CIA director, and others were pleading with the president, don't do that. You're going to create a vacuum and bad forces are going to come in and things are going to get worse, not better. But Biden pressed forward, Obama agreed, and what did we get? That's where we got ISIS. That's where we got actual outright genocide by ISIS, slaughtering Christians, but also slaughtering even in larger numbers, Muslims and then Yazidis and other religious minorities. You would hope that a person like Joe Biden would see that his catastrophic error in 2011 led to genocide and therefore should not repeat the exact same mistake in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, as Santayana famously said, those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. And this is what's so dangerous, because if Biden can't handle the Taliban wisely, how is he going to stop Tehran from going nuclear?
Well, that's the point. He has demonstrated really a staggering ineptitude in foreign policy at a time when, unfortunately, it matters. Folks, I'm talking to our friend Joel Rosenberg. Don't go away. The new book, Enemies and Allies. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204. Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. The new book is Enemies and Allies. Joel, my first question, can I interest you in purchasing some Giza dream sheets for MyPillow.com? let me just, don't answer yet. Pray about it and use the code Eric. Okay. That's my first question. My second question is,
By the way, Mike has graciously given me wonderful pillows. I'm a big fan.
Look, you know, you sit in the room with Netanyahu and all these big wigs. I sit in the room with Mike Lindell. Okay. What discount code has Netanyahu given you on his?
Never. Own? No. We've had a
Joel
big falling out Netanyahu over that. I must tell you.
What do you get? Right. Yeah. Okay. But I joke around. You really know these people. You've sat with these people. You've gotten to know these people over the years. And obviously you write about that in your book, Enemies and Allies, Nonfiction. One question I want to ask you, and you can go anywhere you want, but when people talk about the Abraham Accords, I'm not sure that I understand the significance of that. I haven't heard much about it. Tell us What's your perspective on that? What did Trump achieve anything?
Well, the media did a terrible job covering the most important historic game-changing set of Arab-Israeli peace agreements in a generation. We literally have not had an Arab-Israeli peace accord in 25 years. We'd only had two prior, Egypt and Jordan. And President Trump, who was told by everybody in the peace industry in Washington, you'll make the Middle East worse, you'll never make peace, you don't know what you're doing, you're a moron. And yet he accomplished four Arab-Israeli peace agreements, plus an agreement between Kosovo, a Muslim majority but non-Arab country, and Israel. It's extraordinary what Trump pulled off. And Eric, you know this about me. In 16, I was a sharp critic of Trump. I would have considered myself a never-Trumper. But I did what almost no other never-Trumper did. I said, okay, I have these deep concerns about him, but let's pray for him every day and let's see how he does. When I sat with him in the Oval Office, a scene described in this book, I told him that I'd been a never Trumper. Now, Eric, you know the man. How often does the term never Trumper get used with Mr. Trump in his presence, particularly in the Oval Office? Because judging from the look in his eye, not that often. But I said to him, listen, I didn't believe your promises. I didn't trust you. But I have been stunned by what you've accomplished. And I began rattling these things off. But let's just take a few, right? The Abraham Accords had not yet happened, but we were trending there. It was clear to me that he was going to be able to pull these things off. Four Arab-Israeli agreements, okay? Plus, destroying the ISIS caliphate, liberating 5 million Christians and Muslims and Yazidis from the reign of terror of ISIS, taking out the ISIS terror commander, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, taking out the top Iranian terror general, Qasem Soleimani, ripping up the Iran nuclear deal, imposing a maximum pressure sanctions campaign against Iran, moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, recognizing Israel's sovereign right over the Golan Heights. And I could go on and on, as I do in Enemies and Allies. I believe Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize for the Abraham Accords. I doubt he's going to get it. But if you don't win a Nobel Peace Prize for creating peace with four Arab countries and Israel, what's the prize for? Okay. President Obama won one and never created a peace treaty between anybody.
Can I tell you that's what the prize is for? You know, and I know we've lived through times in our years on Earth, there are many things that have been dramatically devalued. A lot of the brand names, they're still carrying on, whether it's the New York Times or Yale University, the Nobel Prize, especially the Nobel Peace Prize. It's one of those things. It has become meaningless. If you didn't win it, you know, before 1980 or 1990, it almost has become meaningless, because once they gave it to Obama and couldn't give it to Trump, even though he did what he did, you start realizing, unfortunately, it has been devalued. It's political. And so you can no longer care about that. We look to God. Does God want me to do something? Is he pleased that I did it? So I'm glad to hear from you, an expert on this stuff, that what Trump achieved was what I thought it was. It really was
staggeringly successful and unbelievably hopeful in a region where we haven't seen hope in a long time. Let me give you another example. Under President Trump, Trump embraced Egyptian President el-Sisi for liberating 100 million Egyptian Arabs from the reign of terror of the Muslim Brotherhood. We can't think of a single example in history where an Arab Muslim removed a terrorist regime, in this case, the Muslim Brotherhood. And yet Obama rejected el-Sisi, said that it was terrible, made him persona non grata, wouldn't invite him to the White House. Trump appropriately embraced him. Now, I then got invited to bring the first ever evangelical delegation to meet with el-Sisi ever in the history of Egypt. And while we were getting to know each other, I've had five meetings with him, and I described these meetings in Enemies and Allies. Sisi told me, you know, Joel, I'm trying to do everything I can to rebuild the churches in Egypt that were destroyed or damaged by the Muslim Brotherhood at government expense. He's rebuilding those. And he said, I'm building the largest church cathedral in the history of the Middle East, and I'm going to give it to Christians on Christmas Eve as a gift. Would you come again and witness that moment? And I described that in the book. This is historic. And Trump gets a lot of credit for standing with leaders, with allies like this.
We're going to go to a break, folks. I'm talking to my friend Joel Rosenberg, the brand new book, Enemies and Allies. Don't go away.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at salempodcastnetwork.com.
Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. The new book is Enemies and Allies. Joel, first question. Can I interest you in some Giza dream sheets from Mike Lindell's MyPillow website? If you use the code Eric,
absolutely,
you get a whopping discount. Okay, let's put that to the side and let's talk about something else. Can we talk about your book, Enemies and Allies?
Yes. And by the way, Giza is in Egypt. And so that fits right with the theme of the book, right? This is cotton producing country is Egypt. Love Egypt.
That's the best segue ever.
There you go.
Wonder you're, you know, a big seller of your books. You mentioned some things. You said the media did a bad job of covering the Abraham Accords.
Horrific.
It really strikes me that people talk about, oh, we're so divided. Well, a lot of people want to put that on Trump. I have to say, having looked at the situation, because I was not a big fan of his during the primaries. I didn't know whether we could trust him. I didn't know. I let things play out, and I have been so astonished at the viciousness, the simple irrationality that came out of the emotions of people, a kind of hatred for him as a proxy for their hatred of, I don't know what, something daddy did or didn't do. I don't know. But the idea that something this central to world history, a valuable accord in the Middle East, would not be reported, it's almost inconceivable to me, honestly. As bad as things are, you would think that it's pretty basic. Like somebody cures cancer, you know, you got to give them props for that. They refuse.
Well, Trump. You're right. The left wing media, the mainstream media, I don't expect anything good from them. That's why I launched these two websites in the Middle East, All Israel News, All Arab News, to be your Middle East correspondent, to provide original coverage, exclusive interviews, but also link to when there is good coverage. What is that good, trustworthy coverage that day? But I'll tell you, I'm particularly concerned about people on the right of the center right, particularly Christians or general conservatives who have remained never Trumpers. What that tells you is, okay, we didn't know him and we didn't trust him, but even though he's given us, you know, Supreme Court justices that are pro-life and strict constructionists, originalists, that doesn't count. That he's, you know, been more pro-life than any president in American history. Oh, that doesn't count. Right. I have problems with some of the tweets. I have problems with some of the things he's said. But I'm looking at this and saying, and as I told him, you are the most pro-Israel, pro-life president in the history of the country, not to mention pro-growth, not to mention strengthening our allies and putting the fear of God in our enemies. Why? Because people in the enemy camp around the world thought, oh my God, Trump could go crazy on us. That's a good idea. You want your enemies to be off guard. Now it's a little stressful, you know, if you live in Congress, but if you're Russia, if you're China, if you're Iran, you want them to be off guard. And Trump really did an amazing job. And I think anybody who can't say, look, there are things I disagree with him on, fine. There's every president's going to have that. But are we not going to give him any credit for this laundry list of successes. No, I can't in good conscience not adjust my understanding of a person based on what's really happening right in front of me.
It's just amazing, honestly. Where do you see things going right now? Biden has empowered Iran. He has brought the name of the United States very low in the world. It seems clear that our allies, most of them, think that we're a joke, or we've clearly lost prestige around the world for what just happened in Afghanistan, and that's continuing. When you see our enemies strengthened, clearly China is the foremost of them. Where do you see this going apart from the intervention of God? I mean, it seems to me to be trending in a very dangerous direction.
Well, in the Middle East, certainly there's two entirely opposite directions that are dynamics that are going on. And this is what I describe at the core of enemies and allies. Biden is emboldening our enemies and he's rattling our allies by surrendering to the Taliban in Afghanistan, a country we had won. It wasn't perfect, and it wasn't pretty. It wasn't like removing the Nazis from Paris and you're like, oh, we've got Paris. I've been to Kabul. I've met with tribal Muslim leaders. I've met with Afghan Christian leaders. It's a poor, impoverished, troubled country, and it was always going to be that. But it was stable. We had won. And in one moment, Biden, against the advice of everybody, pulled the Jenga stick out and collapsed the entire thing. Now, why that's so bad is because, as I say, at the core of enemies and allies is that our enemies feel emboldened. And Iran is the main victor in the collapse of Afghanistan, because Iran now realizes that Biden is weak. Trump pursued a peace through strength policy, and Biden is doing, chaos through appeasement. And this is a problem. Iran is just a few months away now from having enough nuclear enriched fuel that they can start building nuclear weapons. And what they want, the Iranian supreme leader wants, is a nuclear 9/11. He wants a second Holocaust for Israelis, for Israeli Jews. And when I interviewed Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, he told me on the record, his only on the record interview for any book ever, he said that the Iranian supreme leader is, quote, the new Hitler, unquote. MBS gets the Iranian threat. Biden does not. What I found was every Arab leader that I spent time with fully understands how dangerous Iran is. But they see Biden in full retreat from the Middle East. What's going to happen? What you want to watch for now is, I think this is actually going to pull the Arab nations and Israel closer, because they now have to build a NATO alliance, a Middle East NATO, as it were, as a bulwark against Iran, the Iranian threat. And I would be watching the Saudis. I think that will be very telling in the next year or so. Do the Saudis make peace with Israel? I talk a lot about that in the book, because I've spent a lot of time with the top Saudi leadership.
It's amazing. I'm sorry we don't have more time, but it's so good to know you're there. It's so good to know you're writing about all these things. Folks, the book is Enemies and Allies, a brand new bestseller from our friend Joel Rosenberg. And Joel, I want to mention again, All Israel News is your website, in case people really want to know what's going on. Joel, congratulations on the book, and thanks for what you're doing.
Happy to be your Middle East correspondent, Eric. God bless you.
Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost such a cause. Give me things that don't get
hey there, folks. Alvin, can I just say that I'm tan for such a time as this?
You are.
Is it wrong? Is it sacrilegious to use the idea of my tan? Because everything, wasn't it? Yes, it was.
All the apostles were tan, all of them, because they were fishermen, you know, and they were out there.
They were fishermen, they were tan. And folks, you want to be like the first century church? You need to get a tan. Think about it. Oh, think about it, right? I talked to Paul Anka the other day. He told me he's big on getting a tan. We know that Donald Trump is big on getting a tan. You want to be like the first century church. You need to get some sun. Mm-hmm. You need to get out there and fish on the lake of Galilee. Don't you? Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. Albin, seriously, though, I got to tell you, this week coming up, is it tomorrow? We're interviewing J.P. DeGance about his book, Endgame.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Friday. I think we're going to hear that.
Okay.
Interview.
Well, anyway, the point is we're interviewing him. But I want to say this just because marriages are under attack in the West. And by the West, I mean in America and Europe. It's just a lot of people are living together without getting married. A lot of people get married and then they kind of think, well, you know, the whole thing's optional. So maybe I'll get out of it. I'll trade up. My wife, she's getting older at the rate of one day per day. And I prefer somebody who's not aging, like that young woman across in the other pew. That's not really biblical, folks. And so we kind of need to get a biblical view of marriage, and we kind of need to do what we can to help marriages around us. So I'm bringing this up just because we're going to be talking to J.P. DeGance about his book, Endgame. By the way, I think you can order it with the code ERIC and get a discount. Do I get that right?
That's right. Endgamebook.org. Endgamebook.org.
Okay. But what is the statistic that he throws out that in Jacksonville, Florida, a number of churches used the
solutions
plan
that he has
in the book Endgame. Mm-hmm. And 24% of marriages were saved that were on the rocks.
Yeah. In just three years, 24%.
But that's not just in the churches. That's in the entirety of the area.
Yes, that's right.
So it's actually more than 24%. That's kind of a weird statistic. But I say this just because the book Endgame, you can get it at endgamebook.org. But if you use the code ERIC, there's a discount. But we'll have him on this program and you can hear it all for yourself, folks. But I just get excited because so much is going wrong that anytime you can do anything positive, I just say, let's do it. I actually was mentioning our other sponsor, Nutramedics. They give everything, they give 50% of their profits to missions. We have to focus on what we can do that is positive. We try in this program to be specific. And so I don't just mean, you know, go to our sponsors and spend money and use the code ERIC, but I'm trying to focus on things because when things get dark, we really need to do what we can. It's a kind of spiritual warfare. I shouldn't say it. It is a spiritual warfare. When you do a good thing, it matters in the spirit realm. I think our tendency is just to focus on what's bad and to worry and to be anxious. There's a reason the scripture commands us to be anxious for nothing. God is not blessed when we are anxious and worried. We have reasons to worry, but God says, okay, as soon as you get a reason to worry, stop it.
Yeah.
Instead of worrying, pray. Write down all the things that worry you and pray about them instead of worrying. Worrying ultimately is a sin. If that's not, you know, if that's too stern of me to say it, it is. And so anytime we all worry, but we need to know, no, that's not God's will. He really loves us. And he wants us, instead of worrying, to put our effort and our time into doing something good and into praying about what concerns us.
I think people tune into the show so that they can be rebuked by you.
I think it's a big part of my ministry, rebuking people. Sometimes I will just pinch people and just say, see, God got you for that thing you were thinking. Is that wrong? Isn't that biblical? All right. I think we're out of time, but we're going to get knocked off the airwaves for this preposterous lunacy. We want the right kind of lunacy on this program, not preposterous lunacy. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. And no matter what you do, use the code ERIC.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.